This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Stephen Lockridge.
Hello.
This week, we've got four main reviews for you. We're going to kick off with Initiation. Then we're going to have Great White, Daughter of the Wolf, and we're going to wind up with The Swordsman. Our short shot this week is Snake Dick, for now. And our DTV throwback is The Final Girls. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Initiation. Witten University unravels the night a star athlete is murdered, kicking off a spree of social media slayings that force students to uncover the truth behind the school's hidden secrets and the horrifying meaning of an exclamation point. Okay, this is definitely a slasher for the Me Too movement, guys.
Yes.
It's heavily influenced from a real life case. I'm sure you guys may remember it.
I remember it.
It was a student called Brock Turner, who's a Stanford student, who got caught raping a girl who was visiting at a party, and he got a really lenient sentence. Basically, even though he was found guilty on all charges, he got some really stupid, like 30-day probation or something stupid like that. And it was at the height of the Weinstein sort of stuff. So, yeah, this is very much using that as its springboard, but then sort of coming up with its own sort of questions, shall we say. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was very well structured. I must admit, I guessed part of who the killer was, but not who the killer was, if you see what I mean. But I thought this was really well acted. I thought the use of the phones, the Snapchat and all the rest of it, I thought that was visually well done. And yeah, I just thoroughly enjoyed this. So, Steve, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. It was kind of like a film with two parts, because the first part, you had supposed sexual assault, which you're not sure of, and then all of a sudden this slasher turns up and it just kicks off into another gear from there. And to be honest, I was enjoying it, and it could have just carried on without the slash a bit, and I would have enjoyed it, But then, then it does its like from dusk till dawn bit, and then twists itself on its head, and just goes off in a completely different direction. But it was still really enjoyable, and I thought the performances were good. I thought it was nicely shot. Wasn't too over the top, really. There's a couple of gory bits, but nothing too bad. And thoroughly enjoyable. And it was nice seeing some, a bit like Scream, where they brought a few old, like Butler. And,
yeah, I was going to see that.
Scary movie that I've not seen for a bit,
Yeah, it was good to see Yancy Butler in this. I was watching it going, I know who she is. I thought, oh yeah, it's Yancy Butler.
Yeah.
Rich, what do you make of Initiation?
Yeah, I liked it a lot as well. I'm a sucker for a slasher movie in general, campus set slasher movies. I was very excited when the Black Christmas remake was, coming out, and I actually felt really let down by that. I didn't get on with that film at all.
I still haven't seen that one yet. I've heard mixed things about it. I do need to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some interesting ideas in it, but as a whole, as a film as a whole, I didn't connect with it very well. Whereas this one, I thought it's got that kind of, you know, it's everything you've seen before, but there's, you know, a little bit of a, it kind of a, it still feels kind of fresh, you know, a bit like something like Trick that we watched a while back.
This was a lot more restrained than Trick.
Trick
just went overboard on everything.
Yeah, this is kind of, you know, this brings to mind stuff like, I know it wasn't a campus set one, but, you know, like Valentine and stuff like that. But the pace is very different. I mean, it is a slasher movie, but you only get the second kill around the hour mark. So for two-thirds of the movie, it's, you know, there's not a really a lot of slasher. I mean, go back to the old slasher movies, and that was kind of the way it was. You didn't have a body count, like, you know, people getting killed every 5 seconds or whatever. So this has kind of got a different pace to it. But still, I wanted a bit more, actually. What's the weapon? Is it like a...
It's like a power drill,
but it's like nails or something it's using to sort of...
So that was all quite well done. The killer stuff. I watched another one called Choose the other day from a few years ago, which was again another slasher movie. But that was a film that they kind of showed you too much of the villain and stuff, and it didn't quite work for me. Whereas this, I think, you know, the mystery is there. You know, you've got the who is it? It's a whodunit kind of slasher movie. It's well shot. It's got, like, say, the visual, the sort of text messages and social media stuff incorporated on screen in the same way as, like, The Columnist, or going back to, you know, stuff like Never Back Down. I quite like the way that is incorporated. It's got, as you say, it's got that quite serious tone to it. You know, it's about, you know, it's taking its subject matter quite seriously, for the most part. It does sort of go more typically slasher towards the end. The revelation, not sure about it, but, you know, that's kind of par for the course with any of these kind of movies. There's rarely a satisfactory, an entirely satisfactory conclusion. I think they set up a lot of red herrings, and basically. Then they just go, oh no, actually, it's not any of those. it's kind of this thing.
I think there's a couple they play quite late into it. You know, that they keep going quite late into the film. There's one guy who's just such an obvious red herring right from the beginning. they could have played a double bluff, going, aha, you thought it was a red herring, but no. But, you know, so you're never really sure. But he comes across as way too obvious. But yeah, it's as you say, it does take a while for the first murder to happen, even. And I suppose, really, when you think about it, it makes sense that it would probably take a few days.
Yeah.
You know. In retrospect, but anyway. I just thought really good. Overall.
You were highlighting. A short film by this director's done quite a lot of short films and other types of stuff. He's done quite a few, well, tons of short films, actually. But there was one particular that you highlighted called Dembanger, which has the poster is a variation on the Scream poster, and the film itself is kind of, it's the pre-title.
It's a Scream sequence.
It's basically a variation on that, but it's kind of a precursor to this film, isn't it?
It does tie in. So there's two things about Dembanger. One is, you know, they sort of switch genders for the victim, and the other is, you know, the way it uses social media. Because if you remember, Scream was back in the 90s. You know. You know, pre-proper cell phone era, you know, so poor old Drew Barrymore's tied to a landline in that one. So I thought that it was really good. That, you know, that short, it was a really good sort of update of, you know, that opening sequence in Scream.
And it was also interesting, the use of the apostrophe, which is then a key feature in this film as well.
Yeah, I mean,
not apostrophe, exclamation mark. Sorry, the exclamation mark. Yeah.
Yeah. When you learn what that is, it's pretty gross. You know, it's that whole sort of frat boy, sort of bros before hoes kind of culture. It's like, you know, there's that infamous sequence in Borat where he gets a lift with the guys on spring break, and they sort of let
in the first one. Yeah.
In the first one, you know, it's that shitty mentality of like, you know, sort of really misogynistic sort of thing. Mm. So the guys in this fraternity don't really sort of like, you know, don't shower themselves in glory at all, basically. Excuse me. dying here. Any more to say on this one?
No, I thought the cast were good. I would say, like, you know, you mentioned Yancey Butler's in it, but doesn't really get much to do. It's kind of a stunt casting thing of having a recognisable face. Mm. Lachlan Monroe, who we see turn up in everything at the moment.
Right. Well, he's in Broil, wasn't he, recently that we covered.
And, so he's got a fairly sizable role. But everyone else is basically, as far as I know, unknowns, which is kind of par for the course with a film like this. And you know, one, it keeps the budget down, and two, it's all bets are off because you kind of something like Scream came along and they put Drew Barrymore, and then they tried to show that all bets were off by taking the most famous name and killing them off straight away. Absolutely. But in the sort of Hitchcock style. But I'm not familiar with really any of the work of these, but the cast is uniformly very good, I thought, and the cinematography and the music and stuff. It's a nice round package. What is it about? It's your normal sort of 90-minute running time, isn't it? Yeah. Basically,
yeah.
I mean, if you like slasher movies, I think you're going to like it. And it's also it's got a little something novel and, you know, topical about it.
Yeah, it's both old fashioned and very prescient at the same time. You know, it does really well. So scores on the doors for Initiation, guys. I'm going to kick off with an 8 out of 10. Rich?
8 out of 10 from me as well.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Yep, 8 out of 10.
3.8 for a very solid Initiation. It's out soon. Go check it out. Our next review is Great White. A fun-filled flight to a remote atoll turns into a nightmare for 5 passengers when their seaplane is destroyed in a freak accident and they are trapped on a raft 100 miles from shore with man-eating sharks lurking beneath the surface. This is an Australian film, I believe, and I thoroughly enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything new at all. We've seen this sort of thing before in The Reef.
There was another one called Surrounded or Frenzy. Surrounded.
Yep, there's that. Which, you know, you can even throw in like 47 meters down, I guess. The Shallows. That's right. Yeah, this is it's a shark peril movie, basically. But it's completely solid. You know, I thought the characters are quite engaging. There's one particular Carter Burke style character that you're just waiting to get bloody eaten. There's a bit of padding in the middle where they're stuck on the raft and nothing's happening. You know, it's just like a chance for Carter Burke character to be even more dastardly and just be an arsehole. But other than that, I thought this worked really well, even with a bit of CGI for the sharks. Rich, over to you.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, what's his name? Rob Hill does the bad movie. Is it Rob Hill? Bad movie Bible?
Oh, yeah.
Apologies if I'm getting the name wrong. Mm-hmm. He's done a whole video recently on YouTube about, you know, Jaws ripoffs, you know, shark exploitation and all this sort of stuff and how they keep happening. And here we got, you know, another prime example, you know, but we're in kind of with 47 meters down, we're in the sort of a new wave of them. Mm. This shares this one of the producers of or executive producers from those films is involved in this. sort of driving these forward, and like as we've said, all those other films. But yeah, there's, you know, Jaws is still being ripped off all these years later. It's quite amazing. The opening sequence of this movie is basically the opening sequence of Jaws. They're not really sort of hiding that. I didn't know it was set in Australia, so that was quite interesting when it starts off. We get, you know, the male lead, the white male lead is Australian, but his wife is an American, played by Katrina Bowden. She's basically the protagonist, the main protagonist of the story. But then we've got a couple of
rich arseholes, basically.
going to say indigenous. Australians, or you know, Aboriginal. I don't think they're Aboriginal, but the where are they supposed to be from? Or they're not indigenous. Japanese. I don't know, but
the actors from
where are they from?
Te Kore Tuhaka, I think, is from New Zealand.
So okay, that's fair. So I was just thinking in terms of there's a bit more diversity to the cast is what I was trying to get at, but.
All right.
It's kind of that thing of you've still got to have white male and white female leads, essentially, and the supporting characters could. I would have been really interested if they'd gone for, if they switched it round, and you know we'd have had the character of Tekoa. What was his name in the movie? Was Benny.
Yep.
Yeah, if Benny had been the main man, the guy running the show.
Yeah.
That would have been. Quite interested, but as far as it goes, you know, that's, you know, the typical conventions that we've still got. That's okay, I don't mind it. And the film itself, apart from that, you know, I mean, the first thing you notice is the fantastic scenery. It's got that travelogue kind of thing. It looks amazing. And the drama and all the sort of lifeboat adrift, open water. You know, we've kind of seen all this kind of stuff a million times before, but it's done well. I think it's let down kind of is the sharks, because they are so CG and so obvious.
Yeah.
And then they're not the best part of the movie. They kind of it's almost like it's undermined by the fact that you see them. It actually weakens it slightly. If they'd have been, I don't know. I don't really, you know, CGI sharks are CGI sharks, however you paint it, really. But it's, when the shark starts to attack, you just go, not sure about that. But then again, maybe that's a nod to Jaws in itself, because Jaws had the fakest shark ever.
It did, yeah. Apart from Jaws the Revenge. There you go. Steve, what do you make of Great White?
Excuse me. It's a Ron Seal film. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And you know what you're getting. And I do disagree with that. I thought the sharks were actually quite good, to be fair. Compared to, say, the lions in Rogue. Rogue.
Yeah, they were. You know, yeah, they were better than that. Yeah.
You know.
I can't deny that.
To me, they held up quite well. And like Matt was saying, there is that middle bit where it is padding slightly, and you know, well, you're bound to get that in something with a lower budget. But also, you know, it does kind of give you that bit of tension between the characters, where especially that, is it Georgie?
Because you know he's a dick right from the beginning. Because he's not just a dick; he's a racist dick. Yeah, a bit of an arsehole.
But I was quite interested in his character, because he seemed at first quite reasonable, and then kind of the nastiness sort of just keeps showing itself. I thought that was played really well. And the guy when I look at him, I just think of Henry Golding, the guy who was in The Gentleman and stuff like that recently. Right. He's I don't know. He's one of the rising stars. He did Last Christmas and all that. He's done, but he reminded me of him anyway. But I really liked him as an actor, as that character. I thought he did really well.
Well, I mean, yeah. The idea is you're meant to hate him. You know, he's painted in that particular way. You know, yeah. he is the arsehole of the group, sort of thing. So yeah,
he's from Neighbours, apparently.
Who isn't? it's like before we said, oh, he's from, you know, certain actors from Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's half of the world's actors are probably in Game of Thrones at some point, you know.
But then you've got the actress playing his wife, and you know her character, who's, you know, very sort of, but again they paint the relationship quite subtly that he's quite domineering, and perhaps they don't say there's domestic abuse, but it is gently implied that she is a victim of domestic abuse. Well, I thought that was all, you know, very well, very nicely played, and added that, you know, interesting quality to the story.
Yeah, no, I thought really liked this, I must admit. You know, you got that, you know, that sort of money shot on the cover.
And you wonder, are they actually going to do it, don't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, yeah. But they do.
You know,
but
that's the thing. If you're going to watch this, avoid the cover.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. You know. But then that gives it that sort of extra, you know, air of sort of anticipation and excitement, I guess, you know, going into it. But yeah, I think the cover sort of gives, you know, makes it, implies it's something more like Deep Blue Sea, you know, sort of more action-y.
Yeah, not, it does.
You know,
It's a bit more sort of grounded than that. But it, obviously, you know, they do these little things. I love the ending as well. You know, that whole thing with the sunken wreck. I thought that was really well done as well. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the climax of the film in the... Yeah.
A solid little film.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Yeah.
They keep the tension, you know, pretty well ratcheted up for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we know much about the director, Martin Wilson?
Just a quick look. So Martin Wilson,
he's been going for a while, but
he's this is his first main feature. He's done a TV movie and a couple of shorts. Mm-hmm. But the writer, producer, as the writer producer, he's done stuff like, what was it? He's been involved in Killer Elite. Apparently, he was a producer on that. The Loved Ones.
Yeah. Oh, the Loved Ones. Have you guys seen The Loved Ones?
No, I've heard. I think I've heard good things about it.
It's awesome. Yeah, the Loved Ones is genius, basically.
And that's what I'm thinking of.
I've forgotten the actress in it now, but she's really good. About this guy who gets kidnapped by this girl who likes him, because he won't go to prom with her. And it's really freaky. Good stuff.
Yeah, he'd done this. He'd done those sort of producing jobs, but this one, he's mainly he wrote the screenplay for this one. He's done a bit of writing before, including a film called Dying Breed, which I don't really know about, but a couple of TV series and that. But I thought the script was, the script was fine, and it's
did the main character, what's the main actor, Aaron, I don't know what murder his name, Jacobenko, did he remind you of Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, like a younger version.
Yeah, like a younger Matthew McConaughey.
I didn't think about it at the time, but I do see what you're saying. He was, he's done quite a few things like The Shunna Chronicles and Roman Empire on Netflix, Spartacus.
Oh, yeah.
So he's done sort of quite action-y, you know, sort of series and stuff. Oh, Neighbours. He's on Neighbours as well. But he was fine. And Katrina Bowden's, you know, I was just watching it thinking, where have I seen her? I know I've watched her in something, but she's been in stuff like 30 Rock, which is possibly where I knew her from.
Yeah.
But she's also done stuff like Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Mm. Yes.
And
she's in Hunter's Moon, weren't she, as well?
That's right, which is where I think I recognised her most recently from, I think, because I remember watching Hunter's Moon and her really standing out, but she's kind of got that. She's she's kind of got a generic blonde look about her, or, you know, generic sort of pretty actress kind of thing. So she does sort of mix up with others, unfortunately. But yeah, she did stand out in that, and that's where I remember her from. But I also think way back, I do remember sort of seeing her in 30 Rock. And I don't remember her in Tucker and Dale, but I'd have, again, that's a film I watch. I presume she's playing kind of a ditzy character in that, or something, because it seems like that's kind of a role that she had played on. I think that's the kind of role she played on 30 Rock, and she did Piranha 3DD as well, and different things. There's a short film she did 2 years ago, called Prime, which I checked out, and that was really good. Which it's kind of similar to, and we're going to talk about this actor later. Adam Devine did a film called Jexy for Amazon, which was all about basically what if an Amazon Alexa, you know, tried to ruin your life, kind of thing, because it got jealous or something like that. And that's kind of what this Prime is. You know, she keeps trying to get information from her amp, from her Alexa, and it basically it knows too much. And then it's like making all her decisions for us. It's like, what? Where's my boyfriend now? It's like, oh well, I can tap into his phone. He's at this particular location, and you know, what do you want to do as a consequence of that? It's worth seeing. It's a good little short. It's on YouTube. But I like her. I think she's a very appealing lead, and scores on the Doors, I guess I would say. I think this is a solid 7.
Yep, I'm going to join you on a 7 on that. And Steve?
Yep, 7.
Absolutely. So 3 sevens for Great White. Go check it out. Our next review is Daughter of the Wolf. Following the death of her father, Claire Hamilton inherits a bag load of cash and a whole load of problems. Not only is she struggling to reconcile with her estranged teen son, Charlie, but also finds herself embroiled in a family vendetta when a man known only as Father kidnaps Charlie and demands the inheritance as ransom. Okay, so Rich, straight off the bat with this one, what impressed me is the lack of in media res.
Yeah, or the lack of any real exposition.
Any exposition to begin with. It's like, it's as if they went, guys, come on, you've watched action movies before. You know what's happening here. You know, we're straight into the ransom cash drop with Gina Carano's character, Claire, turning up with the money and stashing a couple of guns because she knows, or she, you know, guesses that she's going to get double crossed by these guys. And I must admit, I'm watching them going, oh, for fuck's sake. You know, any minute
you're waiting
now,
for it.
Any minute now, the screen's going to go black and, you know, a captain's going to come up saying, you know, so many days earlier.
Yeah.
days earlier. And, you know, and I thought, but no, it doesn't. It just barrels on. It gets into a shootout. It gets into a car chase with another shootout, car flip. You know, and it's off and running. We do get some exposition as the film goes along, as you know, but nothing actually stops really.
No, it's, the most we get in that first part, the most we get is a very blurry flashback.
That's right. Yeah. So we get, you know, we get a couple of things like she goes to her dad's funeral. She goes to, you know, she has issues with her son because basically. She went and did another tour of duty instead of, you know, staying at home looking after him, that sort of thing. So structurally, I was really impressed with this. I wasn't as much impressed with the actual dialogue. You know, it was pretty standard stuff, really. It didn't really sort of deliver anything new, apart from the character of Father, played by Richard Dreyfuss. Because basically, this guy... He's basically a child abductor who's grown up. You know, we find out about his MO, how, you know, through a particular character whose name escapes me. Is it Lester, I think, or Linton or something?
Brendan Fair's character.
Yeah, him.
Play Larson.
Larson, there you go. I saw halfway between the two. you know, his own father was killed by father, and he and his mother were basically sort of enslaved by this guy and his sort of brood. And basically, you know, when she asks him why didn't you run away, and he's like, well, to what? You know, he was my whole worldview. Basically, there was nothing else. You know, it's just this sort of big void, this chasm, you know, outside of that sort of field. And you can sort of see those seeds being sown with Charlie. You know, when he's sort of turning around and going, well, you know, your mum would have been here by now if she was going to try and rescue you. Yeah, you know, you've been abandoned. You might as well stick with me, sort of thing. And you can sort of see it working. You know, the sort of the internal sort of cogs and wheels sort of moving around. So that side of it, I thought was really good. But I have to say, most of the script, the actual sort of dialogue between the characters, was like ho hum. You know, there's a bit where sort of Claire sort of turns around and goes, oh. You know, the reason why I couldn't stick around was because every time I looked at my son, all I saw was my, you know, his father's face or something. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm sure you've heard that line like 100 times before by now. But anyway, I digress. I'll jump in again later. Rich, your initial thoughts?
I was echo a lot of what you were saying. You know, it is interesting how it skips. Basically, in pretty much every movie you watch, the main action will kick in at the half-hour point, you know, and this is a film that says, we're jumping in at the half-hour point.
Yeah.
They don't do any of the setup and stuff. The opening sequence is pretty good, nice car flip. We've got, and you know, the shootout and stuff. What was jumping out to me when it started was, you know, the on-location, you know, the shooting on location. It was all made in like... I think it's like British Columbia. Yeah. So it's shot on location with the snow. So there's wolves in it every 5 seconds. You know, there's lots of wolves. You know, it's all symbolism and stuff. Mm. But you see, but they're not CGI wolves. They are actual wolves. There's nice production. So I was thinking in terms of the you know, the wilderness and the animals and, you know, the sort of some of the stuff that happens in it. I was thinking of Into the Grizzly Maze. Which is not really surprising because it's from the director of the Grizzly Maze, right. David Hackle. Yeah, but in that one, he used at times quite a lot of CGI, whereas this one, there's no CGI. You know, it's not like Rogue. If this was made by, you know, if this was Rogue, all those wolves would be CGI. Whereas, so there's a lot of, so I like that authenticity, in terms of an action movie. You know, it's a Taken kind of thing with, you know, a mother trying to, you know, get her child back kind of story, well worn. Gina Carano, a bit of a controversial figure at the moment, with
we'll come to that in a minute.
But I don't mind her. I thought she did she did fine in the role. I haven't actually watched a lot of her movies. I saw Haywire and I saw her in Fast Six, but I haven't watched In the Blood or Scorched Earth or any of that stuff. So obviously I spotted her in Blood and Bone recently, but I thought she was fine. You know, there's not a huge amount to work with the character. You know, it is an action.
Yeah.
You know,
role. It's a physical role and she does very well with the physical side of it.
Yeah. But what I really liked about it was Richard Dreyfuss. You know, I think he put more effort into the movie than you would perhaps expect him to do.
Yeah,
but based on, you know, what other actors of his ilk would do with some of it. So let's look at you know, we recently talked about The Virtuoso, which had Anthony Hopkins 10 years older than Dreyfuss, but Hopkins just sort of turns up, does a monologue and whatever, and they show him a couple of bits, and it's nice to see him, and he's a very strong actor.
Yeah,
but there's not a lot there. Whereas Richard Dreyfuss kind of really throws himself into this character.
Yeah, this is almost on the level of Kelsey Grammer. it's that amount of you know, input. Basically, he's throwing himself into it.
He's quite fierce in this as well.
Yeah, he has. And the thing about the character as well is that he's not necessarily the smartest man in the room. You know, he's not one of these guys who has figured out every contingency going, you know, I knew this was going to happen, so we're going to switch to plan B. You know, it's none of that. It's a case of, you know, for the most part, he's having to wing it because he hadn't really sort of figured that sort of Gina Carano's character would be so formidable. But at the same time, he's got a real sort of animal cunning, and he's been doing this for a long time. So he knows what works, and you know, he knows what buttons to push.
Yeah, he's completely ruthless.
Mm.
I thought he did really well, and he was, you know, it's quite an active role for him as well. You know, you don't just see him every once in a while. He's in lots of scenes with all the supporting actors or whatever. You know, when the action's kicking off, he's kind of the principal, you know, antagonist, obviously, with a lot of what's going on. Yeah, he brought a lot to the movie. So you've got the sort of this could have been a Bruce Willis, you know, this could have been a Bruce Willis kind of situation.
It really could have.
But it's so much better. So that just, you know, elevates it so much. It's just, unfortunately, Richard Dreyfuss these days doesn't have that, you know, cachet of a name like Bruce Willis does. So therefore, you see his name on the cover, and it's interesting that it's Richard Dreyfuss.
In a way, that's like Into the Labyrinth with Dustin Hoffman. I mean, you know, he's not an actor who is particularly prolific these days.
So, well, he does a lot more leading roles though than Dreyfuss. Dreyfuss is a lot of sort of smaller films and supporting roles and things. You know,
Dick
Cheney and W and stuff.
Mads Mikkelsen film we covered a while ago.
Polar, he was in as a small guy. Yeah.
He had one role, he had one scene in that, didn't he? But he was very, very good in that.
Oh, in the bar, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just realising that we've just gone from talking about a Jaws ripoff to talking about a film with an actor from Jaws in it, which was completely unintentional. But there's a snowmobile chase sequence, which I quite liked. I, again, added some nice production value, but it's very, very short.
It's short, but the scenery in this film is you know, that they wring every single drop out of it. That snowmobile chase you mentioned culminates with a fight on this cliff above a waterfall, which the waterfall, you know, this icy conditions has created this cauldron of ice where the water falls into. It looks amazing, you know. Hats off to the location scout who came up with that one, basically, you know. But really superb. You could almost make a drinking game out of the number of times that Claire falls into water. Seems to happen a lot. Okay, so let's need to sort of discuss the elephant in the room a little bit, which is the controversy surrounding Gina Carano. As a Republican, she made some controversial, pretty tasteless comments sort of towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, which basically, you know, it's cost her her role on The Mandalorian, which she was prominent in that in season two. Although I have heard that there are internet rumors going around that she may be back for season three. I don't know who she's kowtowed to, but it's possible that, you know, things are sort of blown over. So I hope, you know, this doesn't get the wrong press, if you see what I mean. You know, I hope this gets the publicity it should get rather than sort of the adverse side of it.
Do people know what it is? Because I haven't got a clue. apart from the fact that she lost her job on The Mandalorian because she said something maybe she shouldn't, that's all I know.
So the thing she said was something along the lines of, to be a Republican these days is like being a Jew during the Second World War.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
Which isn't particularly great. And she, you know, she posted a lot of sort of stuff that since been, you know, which was obviously, you know, just patently untrue about everything.
Apart from that being a silly, it's a silly thing to say. I don't think it was a terrifically awful lose your job kind of thing to say. I just think it's a bit of a, it's just a bit,
yeah, I know,
bit silly.
But it's Disney, isn't it? We saw what happened to James Gunn.
Yeah, because Disney's got no history of racism.
Exactly. No, I think maybe that's why they were sort of overly you know, overly reactive. but, you know, they are a bit sensitive, and you know, they look what happened to James Gunn, you know, couple years ago.
There's a lot of stuff that's a bit too reactionary, really, isn't it, at the moment? Yeah. I mean, if there's something like, I know, I don't want to go off, you know, track or whatever, but if there's like a genuine case of, you know, lots of people, you know, raising very, you know, serious allegations and problems or whatever, you know, if someone like Weinstein or Noel Clark recently, you know, stuff that should be seriously looked into, or even Steven Seagal, there's, you know,
Richard Stanley.
That's one thing, but Richard Stanley. Yeah, I heard. Yeah, there's something. I mean, there's loads of those kinds of stuff. But somebody tweeting something a bit.
I know it's a bit foolish, soft, but I think that's what it is. It's more foolish. I don't think she was actually being prejudiced exactly, but you know, just a bit naive and ill-informed.
Yeah. The long and the short of it is that I don't think that's going to impact the the relative success of the film. It ran on this is coming out on DVD from Dazzler, but prior to that, it made its debut on Sky. It's not on Sky anymore, but I think that's only because most of the time, a lot of these films, when they're on Sky and they're going to come out on DVD, they usually fall off.
Yeah,
they don't usually stay on Sky once the DVD is coming out.
We just
so I think that's all that is.
Yeah, we just seen that with Shockwave 2, haven't we, on Prime as well? So
yeah,
it seems to be the
it's
thing.
It's just, you know, a sort of deal.
They get these sort of like little exclusives for a bit, and then it changes onto sort of physical media. So, Rich, scores on the doors for Daughter of the Wolf.
I think another solid 7 for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree. I was actually really impressed with this. I'd heard negative reviews before, but I think also, you know, if you like the film Braven with Jason Momoa, this would make a good companion to that. So very very similar sort of film in terms of sort of action and location, of course, because you know they're both snowbound sort of survival thrillers.
Yeah, the one I thought of was Blood and Money. Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger one, yeah.
I think that would do a nice double bill.
Yeah, or a triple. Now we've got
you've got a triple bill with Braven. I've never seen Braven. I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it, so yeah. I might check that out. I didn't love this one as much. I mean, I gave both 7s, but I didn't like this one as much as Great White. I thought Great White was a higher 7. This is a lower 7. But I do think there's enough in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's that location stuff. It's, you know, the production value they brought to it. It's Richard Dreyfuss what makes it really worth seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah, 2 7s for Daughter of the Wolf. Go check it out. Our next review is The Swordsman. When his teenage daughter is kidnapped by traffickers from the Qing Dynasty, a master swordsman called Tai Yul comes out of seclusion to rescue her, having to battle many other warriors while also dealing with his failing eyesight. Straight off the bat, guys, I fucking love this film. This is actually surpassed, for the sake of Vicious, as my film of the year so far. I absolutely adored this. I found myself ordering it on Blu-ray while I was at the halfway point. I just found my fingers just like tapping on my phone. Oh, I seem to have pre-ordered it already. I mean, it's nothing new. You know, it's Commando, it's Taken, it's The Man from Nowhere with swords, but bloody hell, it is really well done. Steve, what did you make of this?
Yeah, it was very well done. Really enjoyed it, actually. Like I said before, it kind of reminded me of the Netflix series Kingdom without the zombies. And even the way the script, you know, the piles of the words and stuff like that, even the shot, I mean, the countryside, it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, I'd love to go to Korea, to be honest. It looks so nice over there.
Absolutely.
And I was a little bit, it's not exactly, it doesn't put the story on Front Street. You know, it does explain it as it goes along, and you know, your free flashbacks to fill it out and stuff like that. That was the only thing I had with it, but it does tie it all in. It was just like the first half hour, 45 minutes, a bit like, well, what is going on here? But then you find out what it is, and then it all makes sense. You're like, right, okay, fair enough, I get it. And then you just go with it. And the choreography was absolutely fucking amazing. I mean, there's one scene where he takes on about 50 blokes.
Yeah. On 50 his ninjas. Own.
Yeah. And you're like, holy shit.
And he's blind.
Yeah, and he's always blind. By that
yeah,
point,
and, yeah, and he's going blind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, sometimes in stuff like that, you know, they're there standing waiting for him, you know, like, oh, I'll take you out, then I'll move on to you, then move on to you. And it's not like that at all. They're all flying in, and no, it really was absolutely fantastic film.
Cool. Rich, what did you make of this one?
Well, you see, the problem for me is that this is really not my cup of tea. So therefore, you know, I can't say I'm going to mark it down because of that, but it's certainly a film that I didn't enjoy in the to the same extent as both of you, because this kind of film, as in a film set in was it the sort of the dynasty and feudal, you know, the feudal sort of dynasty and, you know, all that kind of period of history of in Asia and, you know, Korea, Japan, whatever. Any film in set like that, those sort of historical settings don't really do it for me. So I've seen there are a few I've kind of got on reasonably well with, like, you know, Hero or Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon at a stretch. But for the most part... Well, not really. No. Well, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but if I watched Hero, I might not like it now. I mean, it was a really long time ago. But Crouching Tiger, I kind of just went with the thing. But just period Asian period movies. I kind of dread sitting down to watch. So I was not looking forward to watching this at all.
Right.
So, I didn't. I was quite interested that it was basically a bit like Daughter of the Wolf. It was kind of another rescuing my child story, like a Taken kind of thing. And it was, you know, it was the Zatoichi kind of thing going on as well. And so the blind swordsman stuff was quite interesting. Or the almost blind swordsman. He's mostly blind. He's not entirely, but, you know, he needs some glasses, basically. The action sequence were fantastic, although I do think it's the early ones that were the best, because the, you know, as with a lot of these kind of movies, the stakes obviously increase and the number of opponents increase because we've seen how formidable he is, so therefore we've got to give him an even bigger threat and a bigger, so by the time you get to the end, he's, as Steve was saying, facing off with, you know, ridiculous amounts of people. I felt the early sequences had more impact, where we were seeing him sort of more, you know, him between one and two, or you know, one or three or whatever people, and it was sort of focusing more on the dynamics of those rather than just trying to handle a huge. There's one of those sequences where I think they did something similar in The Villainess, you know, where the camera sort of moves and then sort of zooms in on itself and then comes out again and then moves and then zooms in. I think it's something they do in post-production rather than actually on set. But, you know, it's like where you've got a picture and they've gone on the computer and zoomed it in and zoomed it out again.
Yeah.
You know, that's a stylistic thing that I'm not really a fan of. And there was some other bits and pieces that they did. But the early scenes, you know, when the pure impact of the timing of it all and stuff, I thought was very impressive. Great to see Joe Taslim in it as the villain. He's brilliant. He's so diverse in all the different stuff that he's turning up in. But he's a really good villain here.
The thing with Joe Taslim in this, because I'd recently watched Paul W. Anderson's Three Musketeers. You know, Milla Jovovich and everyone.
He's not in that, is he?
No, he's not. But his performance in this was so similar to Orlando Bloom's Duke of Buckingham.
Oh, okay.
They had the same amount of smarm and swagger. You know, the way they talked and everything. It just made me laugh. It's like, he studied, like, Orlando Bloom.
That is kind of an arc, you know. He's playing that's a very sort of particular type of villain, but he does, you know, he does well. He is good in it, and of course he's a fantastic martial artist as well. So that is kind of the bit you're waiting for for the whole movie, is for like to him to break loose, and that's, I think that's where we get to at the climax. But yeah, it's just not my sort of thing. You know, westerns aren't my thing, and you know, it's just one of those genres that doesn't do much for me. But I did really, I really liked the action and Joe Taslim and that, but everything else I was just kind of getting through it, really.
Oh my god! So there's a couple of things in here. You know, it's basically a martial arts film at the end of the day, and it sort of does pay homage to sort of a couple of the tropes. You know, the ability to sense other people who are going to attack you. You know, the bit when he walks through the forest and he suddenly realizes, oh my god, there's a ninja up the tree, sort of thing. You know, without showing any indication that there is a ninja in the tree.
Steven Seagal does that as well.
There's another bit early on that there's another swordsman in this who our main guy had crossed swords with before, who's like, you know, he's an ex-general, and he ends up in a duel with one of Joe Taslim's henchmen as a sort of like a demonstration, you know, just a showpiece. And there's this really classic bit where he's basically paying lip service to the duel. He's just letting the other guy sort of like attack, and he's just soaking it up. And the other guy sort of taunts him, sort of says something like, oh, you know, flowery martial arts or something. And this guy, the swordsman, he does something almost imperceptible, you know, the change of stance or the way he holds his sword. And it cuts back to Joe Taslim, and you see him lean forward in his chair, suddenly looking intently. And it's like, you know, he knows, he can spot this change. We can't spot it. We have no fucking clue, you know, what's changed. But he can sense, you know, the mood of this duel has totally changed. And I just love silly stuff like that, you know, that sort of like heightened sort of ability. I thought this was really solid. As I said, I've ordered it. I can't wait to see it again on Blu-ray on the big screen, because obviously I was watching it on my laptop on the screener. The main guy.
But do you like these sort of period costume?
Oh, I love them. Yeah, I got that.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Warriors of Heaven and Earth and all this sort of stuff. The main guy, Jang Hyuk, I've got a film of his from 2001 called Volcano High.
I saw that.
When he was a lot younger and blonder, basically. Mm-hmm. But I love his story arc in this one as well, because we see him at the beginning, you know, defending the emperor in this duel he has with that swordsman. And then at the end of the film, we get a flashback to even earlier, and it sort of puts everything into perspective. You know, it's just really, really cleverly done.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. You don't get any much exposition or what's going on, and then all of a sudden, you know, it fills it in and gives you piece by piece. And that's, I did like that about it, you know. The more I got into it, the more like, right, okay, that's making sense. That, and it builds the characters and it gives them more emphasis on what's going on and why it's going on, if you know what I mean. So it does move the plot along and moves the story along. And
there's an interesting bit as well where this sort of minister, basically, he hires his daughter to become a surrogate for his own daughter, sort of thing. And you sort of like, you think, oh, here we go. This is the start of the sort of the trafficking bit. But then it turns out that, no, he's actually been serious about this, although he still has an ulterior motive as to why he's doing it. But he is actually offering her this position. You know, it's not like, aha, I tricked you, sort of thing. But he has got a more sinister sort of thing behind it, as we find out. But no, scores on the doors. I don't want to talk any more about this. It's damn good. I'll kick off. I'm docking it 1 point because, for lack of originality, as I said, We could name so many films this is, you know, familiar to, but it is just so well done. This is getting a 9 out of 10 for me.
I'm going to go on 8.
It's funny, you say about the, before I give my score, you say about the familiarity and lack of originality and kind of, you know, but enjoyable nonetheless. Have you noticed that's kind of a theme of the show this week? Yeah, it's like most of the films we've watched are like really well-worn themes and genres and stuff. It's just not that, again, not by design. It's just the way it turned out.
It's just that way.
I think I would be remiss to give it anything less than a 7 generally, but just to be honest about, you know, because of the, you know, my viewing experience and not being a fan of this genre, I'm going to deduct it a point just for that. So I'm going to say a 6, but that's only for that subjective, you know, reason. Yeah. I think you need to be a fan of this genre to watch this film. I think if you're not into this kind of stuff, you probably won't get it. That might be an unfair thing to say, but that's just my feeling.
Well, there is, you know, I suppose, you know, a bit of exposure to sort of the Korea's history and the sort of the court politics. You know, if you're familiar with the series Kingdom, you know, you got a bit of a head start because, you know, the way the royal court works and things like that and the sort of the internal politics, it helps to have an idea of the, not so much the structure, but people's attitude. You know, because you might go, why the hell are they putting up with this shit? But, you know, because it's sort of very sort of structurally based. But if that helps, I think having a bit of knowledge or a bit of experience with the their history, I guess.
As an aside, have you seen Revenger, which came on Netflix?
I haven't seen it yet. No,
that's apparently sort of in a similar vein in like a Korean sort of action heavy Korean martial arts film.
It's on my list of many films to check out.
I'm not sure. Do you know who did the choreography on this? Because I'm having trouble finding out who it was. Whoever it was, they did do very
good job. Yeah.
Did do very good work. Can't be said otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So that's a 9, an 8, and a 6 for Rich. For Swordsman, it's highly recommended. Go check it out. Our short shot this week is Snake Dick. When their car breaks down at a seedy rest stop, two attractive young women turn the tables on the guys leering at them. Nice and short, this one, 7 minutes long. Kind of like a proof of concept, I guess. But really well lit, very, very nicely acted, and a nice bit of CGI as well. So, Steve.
Yeah, it's just random as anything, to be fair. The title kind of gives it away, but yeah, I don't know. They're just there trying to fix the car. There's two hicks, and she pulls a snake out of her fanny and it bites him. I don't know.
It's
just weird.
It's pretty freaky.
But if it, I don't know, if it floats your boat, it was just very, very strange for me. Mm-hmm. You kind of get what's coming because of the name, but it literally does just come out of nowhere. And the fact that it doesn't, that it's not just under her control, it's the fact that her mate pulls out a flute and starts playing the flute to guide the snake as well. He's just like, what? And then that's it. It's over. It's done dusted. But I thought the performances were good. I'm quite surprised that the actual main girl is English.
All right.
Apparently she's been in Downton Abbey and stuff like that as well before.
From Downton Abbey to Snake Dick.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's, like I say, short, sweet, fun, you know.
It is very fun, yeah. It's a good sort of like, you know, turns the tables on the sort of Deliverance kind of setup and everything.
Yeah.
All squeal like a pig. Rich, you chucked this our way. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I thought it is very good. But I think the only problem with it, I think, is how on the nose it is. You know, the title is very you know, cat, you know, eye catching and, you know, controversial, however you want to look at it. But the and you kind of, you do know where the, you kind of go know where the stories might go to go. But if you see the poster, the poster just completely gives it away. So therefore, there's not really an element of surprise. So the film's kind of leading up to an event that you kind of know is going to be coming. So it's well done, but there's it's not subtle enough in its marketing, in its title and whatever, to fully, you know, be, you know, a great sort of shock moment or anything. It's kind of just like, this is what you're going to see. Here it is. And that's the only sort of negative about it, I would say. I mean, the poster is really good. And, you know, the title's really, you know, attention grabbing. Yeah.
I did like the way the name comes up, you know, in the credits, and the way the A is shaped like, you know, a pair of woman's legs with the snake coming out. I thought that was really cool.
Cinematography is excellent. Yeah, the cast really are great. The leery guys outside the gas station, you know, getting more than they bargained for stuff is all really good. Steve was saying that, like, the lead actress was British, the director's British as well. So I'm just sort of trying to check so the film is actually an American production, but it's just a lot of the people involved in it seem to be English. The director is David Mamoudieh. And he's done quite a few different things as a director. He's done shorts and he's done TV episodes and stuff. So he did a Coldplay music video, Lost, in 2009, and a film called See You Soon. So, which is seems to be a drama set around the World Cup. He's done quite a diverse with Harvey Keitel. That's on Prime apparently. I'm not curious. I might watch that. Quite an established, you know, director. So I think that experience shows in the film. And I think you're right that it might be some kind of proof of concept rather than intended as like a one-off. Because I don't know. It seems like, I mean, I'm not sure where you take the concept. Although I've got, you know, other films have done sort of similar. I mean, look at things like Teeth and what was that? What was that film about Ron Jeremy's penis trying to kill people?
It's like 8-inch monster or something.
The one-eyed monster.
One-eyed monster.
So there's things you could do with concepts like this. I think you can't go wrong with if you want something a little bit edgy, then I think this is a good way to spend 8 minutes or 7 minutes.
I like the script. I like the way you know, you got these two arseholes at this rest stop, and you know, it's the way it escalates. You know, it starts off with looking, it's turned up, you know, and then so, you know, they sort of egg each other on, and because the girls aren't reacting to it, it's sort of like you know, that gives them more confidence to be even ruder and things like that until it comes to a head. I thought that was, you know, it felt quite realistic in that sort of approach. I'm sure many sort of women have had to sort of put up with that sort of shit. Probably wish they had a snake dick to deal with it.
I'm sure that snake's got a massive long back history and stuff that they can delve into. Where did the snake come from? How did it end up there? You know, where did the flute come from? You know, there's a bigger story here, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. How did it go from being an egg to a fully grown CGI snake?
CGI is really good. I should say the CGI is really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is just fun. You know, it's a bit sort of weird. It's a nice, you know, one of these sort of confrontations, which is then, you know, switched on his head. So there's that sort of female empowerment element to it.
It's all taken very seriously. I mean, it could have been like a trauma kind of thing, of like really, you know, sort of bad taste comedy kind of approach to it. But no, it's a very moody, you know, serious-minded sort of horror situation in the way it's made. You know, like a, I'm not thinking. I don't know if John Carpenter's the right sort of thing to allude to, but it's played very, very straight. Mm. And I think that is also, you know, to the film's benefit.
See, you know, maybe they're developing into a feature and they'll end up with a finale where she has to sort of go one-on-one with the ass mongoose. But there you go. Okay, yeah, so that is Snake Dick. We'll put the link to the film in the footnotes, so please check it out. It's 7 minutes of your day. It'll put a smile on your face. Go check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is The Final Girls. When Max is convinced to attend a showing of Camp Bloodbath, a film which starred her now-deceased mother, a strange set of circumstances sees her and her friends transported within the film itself, interacting with the characters. This, of course, includes Max's mother's character, Nancy, but also Billy, the masked psychopath with a homicidal grudge against the camp counselors. This is a brilliant homage to the whole slasher genre from the 80s, also being incredibly meta as well, and just works incredibly well. I'd forgotten how good that the trailer for Camp Bloodbath was at the beginning. It's absolutely note perfect. Totally loved it. Rich, you hadn't seen this before, so let's get your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I love the slasher movies, as I was saying with Initiation. You know, it's a genre I have a lot of affection for, and this is a film that's got a lot of affection for the genre as well, and it's also very well made. I mean, we've seen a lot of spoofs and parodies of slasher films over the years. You know, Scary Movie being one of the most famous examples. I really didn't like Scary Movie; it was too crass and you know, gross out humor for me. But this one is really, really well done. You know, they do get it. Specifically, is paying homage to the Friday the 13th series.
And not
taking the piss out of it. You know, not giving although the mask that is used in this particular, in Billy's case, looks a bit silly. It's not designed to look silly. You know, it's not a parody mask. It's not a joke. The situation in the film is supposed to be quite representative of the films of that time. And you know, they do up the humor and, you know, the comedy lines and stuff, specifically like Adam Devine's, you know, stupid jock character and that. But it's all very affectionately done. And the other thing, the other side to it is, of course, is it's got a huge amount of heart, because at the heart, the center of it is this mother-daughter relationship, the tragedy of this mother-daughter relationship, which has been shattered by a car crash. And I thought that brought to mind, that's what takes it to like another level. It's like the, you know, it made me think of films like Shaun of the Dead and The Babysitter and Anna in the Apocalypse. They've all got these very warm, you know, relationships that, you know, that you connect to, that offset, you know, you've got the humor, but then you've also got the tenderness kind of thing. I mean, The Babysitter in particular, I thought, did a really nice job of it recently. And so that all plays really nice. What I didn't know was, until the end credits, that is the lead actress, who is
Max.
She, I was watching it and I'm thinking, you're very much a Jennifer Love Hewitt type. You know, they've seemed to, you know, it's got that I Know What You Did Last Summer kind of feel to it.
I saw
her name was Taysa Farmiga, and I thought, she must be Vera Farmiga's daughter. But no, she's actually Vera Farmiga's sister. Her younger sister. It's like 20 years between them. But as soon as I saw her name on the credits, I was like, I see it. I totally see it straight away. they're related. But yeah, she was good. The whole of the cast was good. But the whole concept is, again, something we see, you know, it's last action hero, it's Pleasantville or Cabin in the Woods. You know, it's got elements of all those. The director of this even went on to do another film which uses the same concept, which was Isn't It Romantic, which was on Netflix, with Rebel Wilson. Where she ends up, you know, she goes from the real world and she finds herself, she wakes up in a romantic comedy. You know, it's essentially the same, although that was a rip off of Delirious with John Candy, but that's by the by. But is he, they said this guy did this film with this kind of concept and he did it well, so let's do it again. But the so there were before I stop rambling, I'll just mention, I love the intertitles bit where they got like Summer 1957, and what they were doing with that, you know, were like, oh, they bump into it or they have to climb over it and stuff like that. But anyway, I will stop my thoughts now and let you guys
Steve, does this still hold up to the last time you saw it?
Yeah, it really does. I love this. I remember rightly, me and Josh reviewed this on the old
On the Soaking Lamb.
Did you as well, or
I think I did. Yeah, I had seen it right about that time.
And then I don't know if we got a screener or we got an early copy or something. And then it just seemed to never come out. It just never. I don't think he's even had a DVD release over here. And I said, I've been wanting to pick a throwback phrase, and when I saw this on Netflix, I just said to you guys last week, I said, right, please, can we do this? Because it is. It is, mate. I love this film. It's so good. Like Rich was saying, it's a gentle spoof, but so it is funny. But then you've got the heart as well. I mean, who would have thought Bette Davis' Eyes could be such a moving song, you know? And another thing I like about it as well is when you're looking at like the sky and stuff like that, and you've got that purple tint, and it just remind me of like 80s VHS horror box covers, you know, that neon cover that they had and stuff like that. But yeah, I thought all the characters are great in it. The acting is superb, especially Tina, the one who has to do the dance.
Oh, she was hilarious.
Absolutely brilliant.
I love that she's gonna do a strip scene, which is gonna cause all the stuff. So they cover her with all the different clothes that whatever they can find, including like oven gloves or something in their temper ups, and to try and slow her down.
That's like she's taking all the pills, isn't she? Basically.
Yeah. Oh, that was brilliant. Yeah, I love that bit.
She finds a mobile phone. She's like, "It's not a phone. There's no wire to it." Stuff like that. I'm only gutted that it kind of sets it up for a sequel, but obviously never it was never done, never got it, which is a shame. But did you watch the credits, like the outtakes and the credits outtakes, as well?
Adam Devine. He seems to do a lot of ad libbing, doesn't he? I think he's I've seen some of his other films, and again, you know, you get this after credits bit where he's like just riffing as he's going.
He's hilarious.
I wasn't sure about Jexy because it looks again, it's kind of a gross out humor kind of thing. I've heard it looked like it anyway, but having seen him in this, I'm actually quite open to watching more of his stuff because there is something about him. I did think he was quite funny in some of the stuff he's like, coming out with, So he did a Disney movie recently. There was a Disney film, a Disney Plus film that he did. And he's in all sorts, isn't he? Game Over Man.
Which has got a very funny autoerotic asphyxiation joke in the middle of that.
He's also in that Isn't It Romantic from the same director as this. I was just mentioning he's got a role in that. Magic Camp was the Disney movie that he did. The Righteous Gemstones series he did as well. He's done loads. Modern Family.
He was in that for a bit. Yeah.
But you go back to what you say about the end credits. Actually, I mean, I did really like the movie, but I thought the end credits part was, for me, like the best part. I just thought that was brilliant. You know, all those little behind the, you know, skits and outtakes and whatever. And usually that would be a bad thing that you would say, but I think the reason it's so good is because of what's come before. You know, it's you've built up these relationships with these characters and you've sort of got to know their humor and everything. And then when you get to the end, it's just like warm and fuzzy and you're just really enjoying spending this, you know, sort of hilarious out, you know, downtime with them. Yep. We've got Thomas Middleditch in it. He's really funny as the sort of the Randy from Scream kind of character.
Yeah.
Who sort of lays out what's happening.
The guy knows the film back to front sort of thing.
Yeah. So Nina Dobrev was Vicky Summers. She turns up all over the place. Yeah,
she has a really good scene in this where, you know, because she's seen as sort of the bitchy sort of character, you know, sort of, a bit like Charisma Carpenter in Buffy to a certain degree. And you get to a certain point where she does this sort of monologue, sort of saying how much she misses Max. You know, they used to be best friends and everything until her mum died, and then she became this sort of close. And it's really touching. Yeah, you know, she sort of lays out all her feelings to her friend. It works really well. The other interesting bit as well is it's literally a one-liner almost, where I think Adam Devine sort of says something to Alexander Ludwig's character, who plays Chris. It's sort of about, you know, something gay, and he sort of turns around and goes, "Actually, you know, sort of my parents are both gay," and it's just like one of the, you know, and it's like the most wholesome person in the whole film, you know, and it's like, yeah, he's the one with the gay parents. It's just like,
but then the line that Devine comes back with is, all they can do is go to discos and have sex a lot. Yeah, actually, that sounds really good.
Which I thought, that's a good line as well.
Paula, who is the sort of the tough, the original final girl from the story, when she turns up and stuff. They didn't get to do much with her character, unfortunately, but I thought she had quite good presence. She is Adam Devine's partner in real life, I believe. I think they've done a few other things together. The other notable member of the cast who need to mention is Malin Ackerman, who plays Amanda Cartwright and her on-screen alter ego Nancy, who Max is trying to save purely because it's not her mother, but it's the closest she's going to get, and she doesn't want to lose her. Again, it's all that heart, you know, of what drives the story along. All the action and you know the kills and stuff with Billy and everything is all very well executed. I love was it one of the characters, he sort of gets slashed and you think he's dead, and then he comes back and goes, no, actually I'm alive, and then he gets killed again like properly. And Adam Devine's death is pretty good, and it's a all around a very good package. The film's, when you get that opening bit where the car crash happens, there's a really weird bit of sort of CGI showing the car driving through a street, which looked a bit strange. And then the actual crash itself kicks in, and it's obviously done in, it's all part of the same CG that they were working. It just sort of, that was, I don't know, it was very distinctive, but very fake looking as well. Yeah. I didn't think it was particularly well executed, but there's some other stuff with, you know, camera movements and, you know, visual effects which were not expected, and they were really nice little trick, like the bit in the movie theater with the bottle and the way the bottle's moving around the floor and stuff, and it's, I thought that was all really nicely very very well done. And later I think it's when they're setting up the traps and stuff in the house, you know, the bit where the camera is just kind of moving around the whole space. Yeah. And it's all kind of wild camera work. So yeah, there's many reasons to watch this film.
Absolutely. I think we've exhausted a few of them. So this film is available on Netflix at the moment. It's a nice change, because usually we sort of draw all of our throwbacks from Amazon Prime. So nice change of pace.
And it did have a DVD release from Sony in 2015. So there's probably, if you're you know, near a CEX or whatever, there's potentially copies floating around, or obviously you can buy secondhand or new copies on online retailers.
Absolutely. We don't score the DTV throwbacks, but we do recommend them. And this one specifically comes highly recommended from all three of us. So if you get the chance, check it out on Netflix. Other than that, thanks to Rich and Steve for joining me this evening and talking about all these wonderful films. I think it's been a really good set of films this week. I think nothing scored less than, well, apart from Rich, nothing scored less than a 7.
But that was only because it was a genre I didn't like. You know, you and I, we've had this before where I've come in and said, this is a really great film. And you've gone, it's really not for me. And, you haven't enjoyed it as well.
Well, it's like The Bike Thief last week. I really did enjoy that. So
there you go. Well, that's a good example. Yeah.
Anyway, but awesome. other than that, I think that, this week in particular has been a very strong showing. Please go and check out all these wonderful films. Don't forget to check out our sister show, The Short Shots. Also, the Twitter page for that, the DTV Digest Short Shots, and also our Facebook and Twitter pages as well, at the DTV Digest. Check us out, drop us a line, let us know what you think. If you've got a film or a short that you might think we might be interested in checking out, you can also drop us a line. We'd love to check it out. So other than that, thank you for listening, and tune in next time.
This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.